Hello. Oh, I've lost my camera already. Let's try that again. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Faultline Podcast, the audio companion to the weekly B2B publication analysing disruption in media and entertainment. We are just back from the Connected TV World Summit, so we're feeling a little bit frazzled from the all the 120 miles travelled between London and Bristol. But we're jumping straight into another podcast episode here today. So my name is Tommy Flanagan. I'm the editor of Faultline and your podcast host. And we have another double act for you this week. We have the delectable French duet. So please welcome Mathieu Planche, CEO of Whitby, and probably one of the youngest CEOs in the industry. Either that or he just has an excellent skincare routine. How are you today?
I'm good. Hi, Tommy. And I do have a very good skincare routine I can share after the podcast.
It's good to know. And alongside you is Johan Ina, who what he may lack in youth, he more than makes up for with brains as the COO at Whitby. How are you today?
Very good. Thank you very much, Tony. I'm very happy to be here today.
Great to have you both here. And yeah, thanks for joining. So in a nutshell, as a short kind of intro, we know Whitby as being famous for being able to simulate user viewing behavior in a way that is kind of as close as possible to a person and for video monitoring purposes, essentially in a very short sentence. So, and Whitby has some very cool tricks up its sleeve in AI and machine learning and advertising, which we're going to dive into in more detail shortly. But as is tradition on the Faultline podcast, we will trawl back through our vast archive of articles covering the media and entertainment industry for more than two decades to pinpoint when the company in the spotlight first came onto our radar. So, rolling back the years, we first wrote about Whitby way back in March 2007, which is almost exactly 17 years ago to the day, which was obviously way before my time. And it was also before your time, Mathieu, because you've been at Whitby almost 11 years, according to LinkedIn. And Johan, you're a veteran of 14 and a half years, also according to LinkedIn. So correct me if that's not accurate. But I understand this kind of longevity is partly because Whitby is a family business, which is fairly unusual in our industry. You know, I've only spoken to a handful of companies and interviewed a handful of people in the 8.5 years that I've been doing this who are involved in family-run businesses. So can you tell us a little bit about the benefits and the challenges maybe of being a family-run business? You know, are there moments where you might find your leadership as CEO kind of undermined because your parents are still pulling strings somewhere from behind the scenes?
It's a question I have often. We like saying that we are a family business because I think it's part of our peculiarness, what makes us unique. Working with your parents, I think it kind of like amplify everything. That's how I summarize it the best. I think 95% of the time, it makes like a very like unique, like special experience because you're kind of like this very nurturing and safe environment where you can develop, I think, very fast and very in a kind of like a trust relationship that already exists. You don't have to build it with your manager. And then 5% of the time, it's total chaos because you have to fight on very serious company business. And then you go back to the end of the day, your boss is now watching over your daughter or son in a totally different setup, and you kind of have to block what happened in the office. What happened in the office is what is in the office, and then we have the family time. So over the last a bit more than 11 years, because there is also like a couple of internships I did at Whitby back then that are not necessarily on LinkedIn, we've had mostly like great times. Very few times where we were not in sync. But I think it's, I mean, to me, when people tell me, wow, you've been two things, you've only worked in the one company. Don't you want to explore other options? And wow, I could never work with my parents. I think that's the two most common questions I have about my career. Very comfortable with both choices I made. I think I had a very exhilarating career it would be. I saw 1,000 things that I would have had issues. I mean, it would have been more complicated seeing at other ventures. And yeah, I've loved working with both my mom and my dad, the good moments and the bad. So yeah, it's been good. I'll give more details at NAB or the review or something. But yeah, it's been a good experience overall.
Oh yeah, I'm looking forward to getting the off the record version of that story. Johan, do you share those sentiments, or have you experienced, you know, family rifts?
So being there for nearly 15 years, I kind of feel myself part of the family for sure.
Johan is oftentimes referred as the adopted son.
It's really a very strong bond, and it helps us move toward the good and the bad moments. When we take a decision, strategic decision, we take it together, and we are on our own to make sure it succeeds. If it not succeed, we have to pivot, we have to do something else. But it's really together in the company that we can that we have to move forward, that we have to progress. And sometimes when we look back, we have made some decision that seemed crazy at that time. Maybe we would not have done the same watching back, but it ended up being very fruitful.
And we're going to go into some of those decisions in a minute. And, you know, this isn't something I normally do on the podcast, but I thought, because we've been writing about you guys for such a long time and you've been in this business for such a long time, I'm going to attempt to do a quick whistle-stop tour through the timeline as Faultline has reported it for the last 17 years. So here goes. So 2007, the first time we write about you guys, that is about how Whitby placed Microsoft's IPTV technology as the best in class for TV service availability, channel zapping time, image quality, and image stability. And this, of course, was in reference to the media room technology, which would go on to become MediaKind today. 2008, Whitby said the average channel change time was 1.9 seconds and that satellite was twice as slow as IPTV at the time. We jumped to 2013, which was when we saw more testing players emerging on the scene, and Whitby launched its multi-screen quality manager at NAB that year, which was a first for full visibility to video delivered on any screen, not just IPTV devices. 2014 was a strong year for customer wins. We had a flurry of deals, including a nice big fat contract at Liberty Global. 2015, you took a step further towards a single view, combining image quality on any device at any time with the instant localization of any network issue affecting quality. 2017, we started to see how the OTT testing field was spawning partnerships between traditional monitoring providers and newer specialists, which was evidenced by Whitby technology being incorporated by Divitel's test lab. 2019 was the first time Whitby found that OTT devices like Roku and Apple TV actually performed better than regular set-tops during the Super Bowl that year. 2020, disaster, COVID hits. Whitby, like much of the industry, is plagued by supply chain issues, which accelerates the shift to the cloud. 2021, Whitby rebrands, kind of to emphasize the rebirth of the new Whitbox family of devices. 2023, you complete the migration of customers to the new Whitbox appliances. And we also see the introduction of more automation using AI-based algorithms. Finally, to the present day, 2024, which is arguably set to be the year of advertising for Whitby. So anything significant I've missed there, or shall we just end the podcast here?
I think it's impressive, and it's exactly as described, and I think you got the substance.
Yeah, it was a very lovely walk down memory lane. So thank you for this. It was like completely accurate and threw me back to some good memories, including the NAB 2013 that'd be burnt in my mind forever. but yeah, it was it's completely accurate.
Good. Well, I'm glad. Part of me is glad I've nailed it. Part of me is disappointed that I haven't made any glaring omissions that you're going to call me out on.
Can I share one fact about this timeline? Because you share the first and the last. So the first was the media room channel change time when we did the benchmark. when Mediarum at that time was 500 milliseconds to do the channel change time. It was by far the fastest in the world to do that, with a large number of servers deployed at that time with AT&T, Portugal Telecom and Dutch Telecom, and also Club Internet in France. And for that, we had to create an algorithm that was able to detect the channel change time without any black frame in between, with the two before and after stitches. And this particular algorithm that we used back then is the one that we also use in the ad monitoring space when we are to detect the ad which is properly being stitched or not. So it's like a loop which being circled back. The first and the last are using, the last is leveraging a technology that was made possible by the first.
No way. That's awesome. I did not expect that. We haven't rehearsed this, by the way, people in the audience. This was not practiced. Matteo and Johan had no idea I was going to do that, but that's a very weird coincidence that it kind of, it looped back nicely.
It's one of the things is we have been in the industry for a long time, and so we have some experience on how to do things. And sometimes, I mean, we're also like we are a reasonably sized company. We are 150 people on the planet. So sometimes, you know, when you're this size, you have to think smart and see how you can leverage what you did in the past to go faster than the competition or something. So yeah, it's a good anecdote.
So I suspect you timed this podcast appearance purposely because, you know, hot off the press in my inbox just before coming into the studio, there was a press release from Whitby teasing some plans for the 2024 NAB show taking place in just a few weeks from now, where you'll be showcasing the Whitby ad monitoring and matching technology, which the sales pitch says can monitor ads which have been dynamically inserted into video streams, and this allows customers to analyze ad performance in real time. But of course, you're not fooling us, because that actually launched in 2023 around IBC, wasn't it? So it's not this week in the middle of March, but it will be the first time showing it at NAB. And of course, that does give us the kind of benefit of hindsight, because the technology must now already be live at some customers, given that you launched it last year. So can you name any names of customers already using this technology, have gone live with it in beta?
We don't. I'll put you in the direction. It's several customers are running this in production now, among broadcasters, streaming apps, one of the top streaming apps in the US, and a major telco operator. So we have kind of both. Like, these are our two main customers using the technology. One on the more traditional telco side, and one like a streaming app broadcasters in the US. We have leads with other like fast channels, or also it's also something that that is very interesting to them, with different challenges, different KPIs that we look into. But yeah, it's we cannot give the names of our customers.
Okay, well, I know you're hesitant because you've never officially announced this or released a case study on it, but it is still publicly known to, you know, a few people who look hard enough, that one of your biggest recent customer achievements came with Peacock's record-breaking NFL wildcard stream. That was in January this year. That reached 28 million concurrent viewers. And Whitby was involved with monitoring that live stream, you know, which almost single-handedly broke the internet in the US. So how come you're reluctant to talk about that, even though it is technically publicly out there in the internet sphere? So why can't you talk about the details of that?
It's purely on the legal side and about the so they agreed that we reached out this post and that we mentioned our participation in it. They approved it before the post. They approved this post particularly. But as to share on the details, you know their service, you know what they provide. So not only in the US, but also in Europe and Africa. And for that, it's really a blast to work with this team. They are extremely demanding, but in a good way. They make things happen. And it's really a very good place to push for innovation.
Is Peacock an existing customer? Because, you know, having that as one of the record-breaking live streams in the record-breaking live stream in the US as your first kind of customer for this new product is pretty impressive. So was Peacock an existing customer?
Yes, our ad monitoring comes usually. So in the way we are working, we are really working with engineering and ops team. So these are the team who have been using Weebly for a while, and ads monitoring come on top of that as a way to really complement, because now the two main sources of revenue are subscriptions, so the service must work, and also ads, so you must make sure. So right now, we are not trying to target the person in charge of bidding for the ads or really managing the inventory, but really all the technical stack from engineering to operation to make sure that the operation is going smooth and that in the field it's working properly on the real devices. So that means usually having this kind of discussion with our main customer, the one that have been trusting us for a while now, and it's a good addition that comes on top.
No, it's a nice addition to a problem that is quite challenging to them, because there are even more pieces to have to work together, and quite recent, because we've been talking about ads for forever. I think the first prototype we did for ads was back in 2015, so dates back to already quite some time. Ads have been in the industry forever, but I think the first like truly functional dynamic ad insertion are pretty recent. It's the last year or so that we've seen like ads really like be generalized through Netflix and Amazon Prime now and Peacock, who have like ad supported subscription.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, just to mention a couple of things, it helps video service providers with things like screen freezes, black screens, application crashes, and that's on real devices like smart TVs and mobile devices. And that's important not only because of the launches that we're seeing of more ad supported premium streaming services, but also because of the emergence of fast services too, which have a very high rate of ad issues. And you know, your own research recently said that up to 30% of fast channel viewing sessions are affected by DAI issues. So why is that so high for fast services?
So it was a bit fun, because I had my kids' friends' parents have been telling me, okay, we stop using cable, we are not using Samsung TV, but it's very strange, it keeps freezing and it keeps going, I will be back later. They are totally used to have a lot of ads in the US. They are not used to have this kind of screens. And for them, it was just broken. They prefer to have the ads. And obviously, the service provider also prefer to add the ad. So this is what is being reflected in this number. It is really happening. The slates are there. They are present. And not talking about the crash of the application, black screen, not being able to go back to the stream. So 30% seems like a lot, but there is space to improve.
Yeah, that's a hell of a lot.
No, and why? Because it's because it's hard. You have how many players are involved, from bidding to inserting different sources that can come from the highest bidder or something. So it's just from a technical. I mean, OTT is already a challenge, delivering your stream to anything. We have a lot of things on the OTT that makes it hard. And when you add on top of this another layer of complexity through the ads, I mean, you multiply the risk of something bad happening. It's it's like different resolutions, different audio codec, different format, frame rate, why not? And so it's just the players are oftentimes at a challenge to combine everything and make sure it's working. So yeah, 30%. We've also have something that we're measuring also with the ad matching algorithm is ad repetition. So that's something that that we detect when you have the same ad that plays several times, when you have an ad that's cut at the beginning or at the end. That's also problems that are maybe less impactful than a black screen or an audio stream that never resumes or a device that reboots, as we've seen sometimes. But that still have an impact on the overall experience of the customers.
And clearly, you know, having little visibility on ad performance is an issue for a lot of video service providers. So how does the new ad monitoring, how does the ad monitoring product kind of quantify that problem? And also with the matching part, you know, how much more accurate is that than other tools on the market that identify when an ad has been played?
No, exactly. And you said it, they have no visibility on what's happening on the devices. They have access to logs and everything, but it's coming from so many different sources that for them, it's very hard to quantify what's going on. It's a word that I like to use because that's one of the things that we say about Weebly. Oh, you have robots, so you cannot be everywhere. I don't have stats about 100%. I'm like, no, you don't. But you establish a reference map and you are able to quantify issues you have in the field. And by measuring the number of issues you have, you're able to know when your engineering teams are working on the problems, you're able to know if they are doing, if it's working or not. Are you working on the right problems? Prioritization, which problems should you start working on first? And then is it actually working? Is it decreasing or not the amount of errors you have on the field? And it's not errors that we are guessing. The robots are looking at what's on the screen. They are hearing what's coming out of the set-top box or the mobile device or the web stream. And so they see exactly what people are experiencing. So it's a subset of tests. You're not going to see everything, but you see the whole chain, the true end-to-end monitoring that's going to give you an idea of how well your service is working or not and if you are improving or not.
Okay, got it. Don't panic at this next bit, but I'm not going to dive too far down the rabbit hole of financials. However, I do have your latest report in front of me. And, there are some concerning trends, including an 11% decrease in turnover for 2023, brought in 23.2 million euros last year. That's 25.3 million US dollars for our American audience. And that includes a 13% reduction in sales for the Americas, which is unsettling because, this is your core geographical business region. Accounted for 49% of all sales in 2023. So just want to kind of understand what the main headwinds were in the Americas or continue to be in the Americas. And, can the pace of the cloud sales offset the decline for the Whitby robots and the software licenses?
We're not unsettled too much. It's a discussion I had with several of our investors already. I don't really see the 11% decrease in revenue. I see that it's the second best year we ever had at Weebly. We had a blast. We released amazing features that were loved by your customers. And the result is that it's the second best year. And 2022 was an amazing year. We had a 20% growth. We did 24. It was 5 million more than the previous year. So there's also, a level effect that we have to fight. Last year was so good that, 2022 was so good that 2023 looks pale, but it's very unfair for that year, for this beautiful year that we had at Weebly, that is our second best ever. The US market, was impacted, as you highlighted, by the same events that we saw everywhere. 200 people laid off in the Valley, the war in Ukraine and Israel who slowed down, a lot of just events, just because people are looking at what's happening and just like trying to figure out what's going to happen. So I just think that in the macroeconomical state of everything, second best year.
And of course, there were plenty of positives too. As we mentioned earlier, 2023 was a milestone because you completed the migration of the entire customer base to the Whitbox range of devices. And the benefit of that, as I understand it, is twofold. Number one, Whitby customers can get easier access to the latest product developments via simple software updates, right? And number two, Whitby itself can save a bunch of money on maintenance, and as well as the installation of the modules, the facilitated scripting, and achieve, those economies of scale on supplies. And that kind of ties into how, what we've spoken about before about there being a cost to using Whitby, which is that physical devices are not invincible. These boxes do break, they do degrade. And of course, the nature of being in the hardware business is that for some people, you don't want the hardware to last forever because then you won't be able to sell new hardware. The Apple model of doing business. But, you can grow annual recurring revenue from cloud sales, on a SaaS basis, which was, let me check my notes, up 60% in 2023 on the cloud side. So I know you're very proud of the, you know, the latest compact unit. Do you want to flash it again for the camera if we're putting this out in video?
Yes, I will. I grabbed that, grabbed one. I was like, no, I forgot mine at home. So I grabbed one of our sales mine.
Perfect. There she is. I know you're very proud of that. But, you know, do you have a kind of roadmap already for the next generation? I know it's probably too soon to be asking about that, but, you know, I'm very impatient. So I'm always looking into the future. And, you know, the question then is how low can you go? You know, and because at NAB last year, we spoke about whether Whitby would ever go full software and possibly even, you know, mostly SaaS. And the answer was kind of no, not anytime soon. You know, is that still the case, you know, almost a year later?
I mean, the answer was, if I remember correctly, it was we'll stop when Comcast stopped pushing boxes in your living room or mm-hmm. Apple or Samsung with their TVs and so on. As long as there's hardware that you need to use to watch content and it's not directly streamed into our brain, I don't think we'd want to monitor that. but I think there is a real need for people to test on true end-to-end devices. So, of course, we're already working on the next generation of the Weebox. It's a product that we continuously engineer. We're working on other models also that might solve some needs. I hope that Noemi from our marketing team is not listening too much, but we'll announce some cool stuff at NAB also this year with a new Weebox that targets a different type of monitoring. In order to solve one of the pain points that some of our customers are having, and this Weebox will also be deployed as a full SaaS. It's also possible to deploy it on data centers on full VMs, because the questions you ask are totally relevant. And a year ago, it was too soon to talk about it. So I told you, no, we need physical devices to test on physical devices. And I still stand by this. It's totally true. But on the other end, mm-hmm. you said it, deploying hardware is a hard business. Johan runs operations, so maybe he'll want to say a couple words about it. He has many examples where he can testify that it's hard. And part of our role also as a business is to make sure that we diversify enough to sustain the growth and that we can make sure that 2024, nobody's going to tell me, oh, your revenue went down 2 points. So we are also looking into different areas where to expand. And the OTT is something that we are not exploring fully today. There are adjacent space that we could that we will look into very soon in order to expand our offer and have even more monitoring capabilities for our customers. Some requiring hardware deployment, because we still strongly believe that you must have end-to-end monitoring to know exactly what's happening, but also some software-based monitoring that will allow you not to see everything, but maybe see things faster, have a first level of approximation that you can then confirm with a second measurement on the device itself.
Okay, very cool. We again, this is almost like we rehearsed this, but I genuinely didn't know you were gonna give me that answer and give us that's the exclusive scoop I was after, really. There we go. So anything to add to that, Johan, about the upcoming NAB release?
I'm very excited to go there, and it covers what we'll be discussing is really improving the overall operation. When you said it's important for Whitby to lower the cost of operation, so in my team to be able to make sure that we can use as little human resources as we can in order to sustain the monitoring, it's also true for the customer, obviously. The TCO of the product when you run automation goes with the automation product and the people that you have to operate it. It's always the case, which is also how we differentiate for purely open source build your own, because we take care of all the hard stuff. For example, iOS 17 was launched. It was a pain because they changed a lot of things. Yes, we had to do that, but it will be able to benefit for a lot of customers. But in the end, testing on the real devices, I don't think it will come away soon, because so much is happening directly on the device. Fragmentation on the smart TV market is huge. More than 15 operating systems are fighting against together. So it's not something that you can just put in a simulation and try to guess if it's working or not.
Okay, let's go back to that timeline at the beginning. You know, when we first started writing about you and Microsoft Media Room, as it was then in 2007, what was the sort of percentage, ballpark percentage of automation that you guys were demonstrating then, 17 years ago, and what sort of percentage is that at now? I don't know if you can pluck those ballpark percentages out of the air.
So at that time, it was mostly for monitoring. So it's kind of weird. The way we are coming from is that compared to other companies who are focusing testing devices, which started in the lab, we are crazy enough to start in the field directly from day one. That means on live stream, in real time, on content that you do not know in advance. And at that time, it was doing the channel change measurement with channel change time, availability, quality, as well as peripheral services like video on demand, and that was pretty much it at that time.
Okay, I asked that because I've scribbled a note here that says as much as 80% of the scripting and navigation in testing is now done autonomously, which is, you know, a significant percentage. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's when you are using your device. So at the moment, most service provider will be releasing product either on the Comcast SDK or on Android base. At the time where they build their own Linux box, it's not what's happening right now, what we see in the field. And it comes pre-packaged with a lot of different features, which has to work. It's very important. If you want, as a service provider, to succeed and stay on HDMI 1, you have to get Netflix, Disney Plus, and everything else to work. And in order to navigate in all this application, the navigation has become kind of less and less creative. I mean, there is Android standard, Android TV, Netflix standard with the RAID. They really broke the whole way to navigate in a catalog compared to section and so on. Very dynamic. All of that is extremely dynamic, changing a lot, A/B testing, marketing team in order to try to differentiate because they have the whole ground, the same base. They have to be creative in UI. They are doing some trial and error. They are putting a new UI and getting it back. So the old way of navigating by taking captures is kind of over. If you take more time in doing automation that you take to release an application, it's done. Automation does not provide value. So we had to think it through and find a way to not have to capture anything, and having the robot behaving like a user. So understanding what is a component, what is a graphic, how I can move, what is a rail, what is when on Apple TV, when you move between the tiles, if it's being zoomed in, that this is the one selected without having to tell, okay, look at this pixel, look at that. It's really trying to mimic the user as much as possible.
That was a great explanation. Thank you. I want to bring up some limitations. You know, one that I've heard, I think it's one that we've discussed before that you might have admitted, is that, you know, Whitby can be guilty of being too slow to test through the UI. You know, last time we spoke, I think it was approximately 10 minutes per asset per device and up to 3 weeks to cycle through an entire content catalog. That uses a combination of the software agents and the physical robots when we were talking about that at the time. So how do you reduce that time, and have you reduced that time since we last spoke?
I mean, the weakness, but also the strength of the product is that in order to get to the latest show or episode of a show, it has to actually navigate through the UI. And in order to make sure that the different audio subtitle tracks, video streams are working, we have to actually watch and listen for them. And so if you want to make sure that the first 5 minutes of your video do not have like an encoding issue or like that are in good quality, the way around it is to actually watch these 5 minutes of videos and analyze it as they come out of the HDMI. And so from a post-device perspective, the cost of testing the whole chain and every component, the cost of seeing everything is that it takes longer to see it all. And so, yeah, to cycle through a catalog of tens of thousands of assets, it can take us to up to 2-3 weeks. One way to condense it, so there are things that we did on the scenario side, on the scripting, on the automation part to condense it. So we work on the algorithms to go faster. We talked a little bit about Smart Navigate, our algorithm that navigates automatically in the UI to make it more reliable, and therefore it doesn't have to do retries, and so the test takes a shorter amount of time to run. But in the end, you still have to play with the set-top box, actually understanding the command and executing it and displaying the results and so on. So there's that. Post-device takes time, and that's the price you pay to see what's coming out of the stream. Just like a human needs time to see what's on screen, they go much faster than human, but they are still using the same inputs and outputs as a human. Another way to answer this is by reducing what you see, right? If you accept to approximate the results that you measure, you can take shortcuts and you can scan through something faster. For instance, if a video stream is not in the back end or is not available from the head end, there's a very good chance that it, unless it's cached on a CDN or something, there's a good chance that it won't work on the device itself. And so OTT testing, scanning through the manifest, making sure all the profiles are up and running, that you already have audio, subtitle tracks and so on from a manifest level, like we started doing with the ads technology, looking at what's happening on the network side, is one way to go faster. And you don't see everything, but you have a first level of approximation that might tell you, because the problem, I mean, it's not really a problem that it takes 3 weeks to test the whole catalog if you know where the errors are. And so if you test the first errors at the beginning, because you know that there's a chance that it could be this asset or that asset because there's something wrong on the network side, then it allows you to pinpoint errors faster and confirm them on real devices or not. Does it make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. Yeah, we'll go into more detail in Las Vegas in a couple of weeks. But this is just on a final note, as we're closing out, you know, this is the part where I ask you for, not for a success story, but for a horror story, something that's gone disastrously wrong. You know, we've spoken about the Peacock success, and that was a big win, not just for Peacock, for you guys, and hopefully we'll get more details on that as and when you're allowed to talk about it. But we're much more interested in horror stories, so can you give us some blood and gore of something that's gone badly wrong? Without, you don't have to name names.
I'll give you an anecdote. It's not really a horror story, but you triggered me with the NAB 2013 earlier, so I want to, that's an anecdote that I'm willing to share. So we're announcing multi-screen, first robot doing iPhone, iPad, kind of a big thing. It was my first NAB. So I had like my, I was like, tw- I mean, I was 24. So I had like a, an, I had bought a new suit and everything, very happy. The robot arrives at Las Vegas. It was bent in half. It was completely hacked because of the transport. It arrived completely destroyed. And I remember having to run to a hardware store to buy like a hammer and some screwdrivers and stuff to try and fix it with Paul Roland, our CTO, who was assisting me from Europe. And he was like, yeah, bang this piece this way. And so it was like a very stressful couple of days. We ended up putting it back together and the demo ran fine. We had to hid it a little bit in the background because the robot was completely stashed. But when you said NAB 2013 multi-screen, it kind of like, you know, like pulled me out of my body and threw me back like into my 24-year-old self and like stress again, relieved the most stressful couple of days, not the most stressful now, but relieved these two most stressful days of this year. So that was I don't know if it's a horror story, but it was definitely a traumatic moment in my time at Whitby.
That's great. How big were those robots back then?
Big enough that I wasn't able to carry them, because now, I mean, you heard me do the joke. I love to have this one, and I'm like, ah, look at my robots. It's very nice. No, the robots before, they were 4U's. They had a big screen and keyboard integrated in them, and it was a server rack, so I mean, it doesn't fit in the screen, I guess. But yeah, it was like a chunky 50-something pounds, 25 kilos.
No need to worry about if you were moving them around the day. No need to add additional work.
My first, when I started at Whitby, I started at the production. So I did 3 months actually running the robots. And so I remember two things from that time. First, the production process was dozens and dozens of command line you had to type manually on the system. Today, that's also something that we didn't talk about it too much, but today to produce one of these, we plug the power and Ethernet cable. It auto registers itself to our central cloud. It downloads its configuration, gets the latest updates, and it's shipped ready. But before that, we had to boot on the BIOS and change the boot order in order to boot on Ethernet. It was like a crazy, and you had like every robot was maybe 2 or 3 hours of man time. So I remember first the crazy amount of manual commands you had to put to make a robot. And the second thing is the weight of these boxes. And I was working another guy in the team whose name Mamadou, if you see this podcast, but he was like a giant, like a 2 meters something, super muscular. And he was taking these boxes like this, and I would see him like take the robot, put them in the card box like this, like that. And I remember being completely desperate looking at him do this, and I was like struggling to get mine in the box without actually breaking it on the way down. So yeah, we grew a lot as a company over 15 years.
Well, yeah, last time I saw you, you told me that you could quite easily juggle two of those devices now. So if you've got a second one to hand, you can give us a little demo of juggling.
one of the tension points with my board that Dave asked me to stop doing.
Yeah, we're going to start seeing that on the books, aren't we? Damages from juggling. Yeah, thank you, Matteo. Thank you, Joanne. That was a really interesting chat and a great little precursor to NAB. So thanks again. And thank you to everyone for listening. And we will see you in Las Vegas. Cheers.
Sounds good to me.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Bye.
See you.